Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm back from Germany. Thanks to everyone who made that possible. And, of course, we're hanging out with some of the finest men and women in America, even though we're in another nation and what we're up against. We should feel pretty good about our armed forces and where we're at as a nation. They are feeling good about it, and they feel like they're not being ignored. Ambassador Dennis Ross is going to be with us a little bit later. If anyone can unwind with the stakes in Iran and the Middle East, he can, and the odd stance the Gulf states are taking when it comes to U.S. and Iran. And Senator Shelley Moore Capito will be with us. There's so much going on. She's with Appropriations, Commerce, and Rules. And we'll see what the Senate's going to be up to today. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Well, there's no question about it. And the Chinese lose because Venezuela has a huge amount of rare earth materials. And if that turns out to be pro-American rather than pro-Chinese, they just took an enormous hit strategically.
While Venezuela looks to be playing ball, what's left of the Maduro misfits shows a willingness to work with the U.S. That's pretty interesting, right? As the true leader, in my view, joins Donald Trump in the Oval Office today. How long until the elections?
Number two.
If you listen to the president's words, it's clear that right now there's a little bit of a pause. He's fixated on the fact that there were no hangings. And so we'll have to see in the days ahead.
Yep, Iran's regime on the brink as Donald Trump rattles their cage and the region shakes. We talk about the stakes and the strategy and my hope that this evil government falls.
Number one.
Tonight I want to share another way you can help. Witness. Help us establish a record of exactly what's happening in our communities. You have an absolute right to peacefully film ICE agents as they conduct these activities.
Just a terrible man and a terrible governor. Minneapolis mayhem, another ICE-related shooting as the city, inspired by its ridiculous leaders, harass ICE doing their jobs as Trump doubles and triples down. Plus, we look at the uncovering of even more massive fraud, this time with transportation and trucking. So you got daycare, you have health care, and trucking, mostly around, drumroll please, the immigrant Somali community. No, it's not racist. It's faxists, if that's a word. Probably isn't, but you know what I mean. First off, the protests are ramping up in Minneapolis overnight after another shooting. Now, what happened with that shooting? It's kind of interesting. Let's see. At 6:50, federal law enforcement officers were conducting a targeted traffic stop in Minnesota of an illegal alien from Venezuela who was released in 2022 by Joe Biden. Then, when he realized he was being zeroed in on, he runs away. He flees the scene. I'm a little shocked it's only one ICE officer. There's 3,000 there. Why is this guy alone? But the law enforcement officer cut off to the subject on foot and attempted to apprehend him. When the subject began to resist and violently assault the officer, while the subject and law enforcement were in a struggle on the ground, two people came out of the nearby apartment and attacked the enforcement officer with a snow shovel and broom handle. As the officer was being ambushed and attacked by the two, the original subject got loose and began striking the officer, too, with a shovel and broomstick. Fearing for his life, he pulled out his gun, shot the guy in the leg, and we got the guy. Wow, is that really ICE's fault? Are ICE a bunch of thugs? Really getting illegal immigrant criminals out of your city because you won't and you blame ICE? You are absolutely insane. Listen to some of this irresponsibility. Cut 11.
Let me get you on record, if I can, Mr. Mayor. Do you support abolishing ICE?
I do not support abolishing ICE. However, I absolutely oppose the way that this administration is conducting themselves with us.
The only reason they have to get aggressive with your people of Minneapolis is because you got the people of Minneapolis incensed and radicalized to go after them. Cutting them off in the street, that's how that woman got killed, and stopping them from going around from place to place. They're not taping them. They're screaming at them. They're honking horns and hitting bells. And that's what you're doing, Governor, and that idiot mayor, Jacob Frey. Why America is, again, subjected to his idiocy, so over his head. Why Minnesota can't give us politicians that know anything, that are willing to follow down on corruption, crack down on criminals, support cops, is incredible. Here's Brian O'Hara, the police chief. Cut two.
There's a crowd gathered in the area, and we have called for mutual aid from the Minnesota State Patrol and Hennepin County Sheriff. The crowd is engaging in unlawful acts. They have thrown fireworks at police officers, and at multiple times, gas has been deployed. Police are attempting to disperse this unlawful assembly at this time. I urge anyone that is at the scene to leave immediately. This is already a very tense situation, yeah, and we do not need this to escalate any further.
Look, I know the police chief's got to keep his job. That's a responsible thing to say, but I don't think he's been firm enough in supporting ICE. ICE is doing their specific job they've been trained for. Don't listen to Chuck Schumer and says they're just being thrown out there ill-trained. There's always rookies, especially when you want to put more money into ICE and you want to get more ICE officers out there because they've been diminished by the previous administration. But they're always around experienced people. You know how it works. But Governor Tim Walz, who quit to focus on making Minnesota safe, that's why he's not running for a third term. No, the fraud's going to come right to his doorstep, and we all know it. If there's any justice in the world, he's not going to show up, I know, for the ICE hearing next month, nor is the AG, who is corrupt as the day is long. So here's John Fetterman, again, making sense, cut 14.
I think two things can be true. You know, round up all the criminals, deport them. They shouldn't have ever been here, and they definitely have to go. And now, right, I don't know, want to see more and more things happening in Minneapolis now, too. So two things must be true, and I strongly reject the extreme on either side, you know, about this now.
Yeah. ICE has to get tough because there's getting resistance from everyone. People they're not targeting, people getting in their way. Some of the abrasiveness, they say, go outside their hotel rooms. They kick them out of yesterday, a group of ICE agents wanted to have dinner. And everyone goes into this Mexican restaurant and starts disturbing them, throwing them out. So when you start making life miserable for ICE, they're going to make it miserable for you. And now instead of 1,000 on the ground in the sanctuary city, because you need way too many because there's not enough, no cooperation with the cops, now there's 3,000. And you say, why are they doing that? Why do you think they're doing it? Because you can't establish order in your city. You made ICE the enemy. And stop saying immigrants among us, my neighbors. They're going up to your illegal immigrant criminals. And if they're illegal immigrants who are not criminals, just overstay their visa, you're still breaking the law. And you want to go stick up for them? Good luck with that. That's against the law. You can't pick or choose laws in which you want the president to affect. That's not the way it works. And lastly, because I want to give some time for the senator, the fraud is everywhere. Nick Shirley is at it again. He came out and focused on trucking. Trucking has addresses and getting all this funding where the address is just a convenience store or an empty building, just like daycare. Same thing, getting millions of dollars, no people, no business. They even go up in this tape, and I encourage everyone to see it. And you see a fleet of vans that haven't moved in 8 months. They have time-lapse video to show it. Nick Shirley, Shirley was doing it. He was on with Jesse last night. Cut 15.
So you guys were working off of a list here. Did you go to any addresses that had cars that were taking kids to daycares?
No, and I'm being 100% honest. There was not a single location we went to where there was cars that were moving people around Minnesota.
And you were calling the phone numbers, too. Did anybody pick up?
Yeah, well, I mean, like Quality Learning Center, for instance, that phone number went to nowhere. If you make a phone call to any of these locations, I mean, just going to the address is enough. There wasn't anyone even there. There wasn't even signs on a lot of these places. They were apartment buildings. So, I mean, phone call wouldn't have done much.
Okay, a couple of things. I'm going to take a break now, but do you understand what's going on here? This guy was almost vice president of the United States in his state. Rapid fraud and rampant fraud. And think about it, if this is just happening in Minnesota, think about where all our money's going. We're $37 trillion in debt because of the rise of social programs that never seemed to go away. When Elon Musk went in there with Doge, he noticed all this fraud and a reluctance to crack down on it. Now we're seeing it front and center. And now they want to push back and say they're being targeted. Donald Trump's making it up. We're too smart for that. Please don't fall for that. When we come back, Senator Shelley Moore Capito about something else controversial, and that is, can men get pregnant? It's pretty easy. We're also going to talk about what's happening in Iran, the War Powers Act. It was stopped from stopping the president in Venezuela. Also, what our options are. I want to make sure those protests result in the overthrowing of that government. But guess who doesn't want it? The Gulf states, our allied Gulf states. I'll tell you what they're saying.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Senator Shelley Moore Capito joins us now over in West Virginia. I appreciate you being with us, Senator. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Good to see you.
Great. So I know you're on Zoom, so people watching it, listening at home, you can go to your catch us on the stream. So, Senator, first off, I want to talk about the transgender sports. I mean, to me, it's obvious. I know where you stand. I'm with you that let's keep women in women's sports and men in men's sports. How do you think the ruling's going to go, though?
Well, I think it's going to be, if it's not unanimous, I don't know why. I mean, when you saw some of the questions that were asked in terms of the West Virginia case, it's a Title IX issue. I think it's pretty clear that Title IX was meant to not discriminate because of sex. And I think that is what it's doing is protecting women's sports. And it's actually been a huge result of the growth of women's sports in this country. Both I was the beneficiary of it. My daughter played NCAA one sports. I mean, it is just something that we need to protect for future generations. And, you know, honestly, I can't even believe we have to go all the way to the Supreme Court to find the answer out to this, to be honest with you. Seems pretty common sense to me.
It does. In fact, people don't really aren't digging in against it because they know the arguments are ridiculous. Why discriminate against who? Women. Women are usually, you know, we were fighting for women for the longest time.
Right.
For the longest time, we felt as though if you set up anything against women, you were sexist. Now, if you're going to bat for women, you don't have tolerance. But you're a former Division I athlete yourself, so you've always appreciated athletics, right? And the need for to compete against your own gender.
Well, sure. You get a lot from the opportunities that have really increased so much over the years, different types of sports, different types of opportunities that then lead to great jobs, great leadership positions. These are things that before women really had the opportunity to have equal protections in the sports arena at schools and everything really weren't afforded to women. I thought one of the best questioning was Justice Alito when he asked them to, you know, define what a girl is, and the person couldn't really define or didn't wish to define what a girl was. And he goes, well, how can I decide who's going to be in girl sports if you can't tell me who a girl is? And so I thought, you know, that just to me really brought it down to this argument of allowing really people that are stronger, they have different physical makeups, no matter how they identify, it tips the scale in their favor in many of these sports. And that's just not fair. It's a total fairness argument. And I think it was very well made by both states.
So I wanted to go off the switch, if I can, dramatically over to Iran. And the president said, I want the hangings and killings to stop. And they canceled the hangings. They reopened the airspace. And evidently, they have not seen, we're going by reports, and it's so hard to get it. We have not seen much of that, although they were shooting into the crowds where the Iranian security forces in at least six different provinces. Here's what the foreign minister of Iran told Brett last night. Cut 20.
My message is, do not repeat the same mistake that you did in June. You know, if you try a failed experience, you will get the same result. You know, in June, you destroyed the facilities, the machines, but the technology cannot be bombed, and the determination also cannot be bombed.
So his message to Trump is, don't do what you did in June. We all know it was one of the biggest successes you could possibly have in June. But what do you think our role should be? Because I'd hate to think that this regime stays in place and these people feel abandoned again. But we really can't get involved in people's revolutions either, as justified as it is. Or can we?
You know, I don't think that full involvement by the United States in this revolution is in our best interest or in the world's best interest. I think what we see here is a pivotal point for Iran. How many times have we seen these protests sort of foment, but nothing like this? And we're not even allowed to see what is really actually occurring, which tells me a lot more is occurring than what we can actually see. So what I think we need to do is what the president's done: support the protesters, support the people in the neighborhood that are most deeply affected, where we have quite a presence anyway, in many of the nations surrounding Iran. I think that we as senators, and I would put myself in this boat, have taken the opportunity to make known publicly our support of the protesters, our fight for democracy, to quit the oppression, to quit the killings.
Only words.
Yeah. And so at this point, but I know that the president's keeping every option on the table. He's been very public about that. And I think that if others in the neighborhood, including us, decide that we could tip it over into the win column for freedom, then maybe we get a little more aggressive in what we would do. It's certainly not. On the ground.
Right.
Certainly not.
But this starts because they couldn't in Tehran. They ran out of water. Inflation's going through the roof. They know billions are going to Hezbollah, millions are going to Hamas. And they're saying, what is this government can't run anything. And that's why all 32 provinces have showed massive unrest. So they earned this tumult in their country.
Well, yeah, and there are a lot of young people in Iran. It is a much younger country than a lot of people realize. And also it's well educated, which means people know that there are other ways and better ways and more free ways, to live, where they can share in the prosperity of their own country, because we know Iran does have a lot of riches or availability of riches. But I mean, I can remember when the Shah was ousted in the 70s. And this, the Ayatollah, which we'd never heard. What is an Ayatollah? You know, we didn't really know at that point what exactly that is. And every succeeding Ayatollah has been a crushing regime. And look how it has affected our country. It's grown internal terrorism within our own country. It's grown it in the region. It's supporting, Hezbollah and Hamas, which is that horrific attack in Israel. I mean, this is not, if this ends in a total upheaval of the Ayatollah, it will be one of the best days of my life, quite honestly.
I hear you. And lastly, real quick, War Powers Act to stop the president from continuing operations in Venezuela got stopped in the Senate. I know you are not one of the people voting to stop the president, but there's nobody on the ground. Senator Rubio's like, right. What are you doing? We're not an occupying force.
No, there's no hostilities. There's not. He did write a letter yesterday reconfirming that there are absolutely not one single American soldier on the ground there. It was a law enforcement exercise with the help of our great and unbelievable, when you hear the details of it, military to protect our law enforcement, to bring a criminal to justice in New York. And that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, hopefully that's what we're going to see. I just don't know. When do you think they should have elections, Senator?
Well, you know, I would think sooner than later. I mean, obviously, the last election was a farce because Maduro just declares himself the victory, even though
he lost.
Public vote shows that. Yeah, that he. I wish I could do that. That'd be great. I think also that the president has been pretty upfront with saying, let's give this new the vice president who has ascended to the presidency a chance to work. That's a good strategy, I think,
because this way we don't have to be on the ground. Senator, thanks so much.
That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We have been notified and pretty strongly, but we'll find out what that all means. But we've been told that the killing in Iran is stopping, and it's stopped, and it's stopping. And there's no plan for executions or executions. So I've been told that on good authority. We'll find out about it. I'm sure if it happens, we'll all be very upset.
So the President of the United States saying there'll be no hanging, and they said there was no killing in Iran. But I don't know. I know what. The 26-year-old, a very specific person, they were going to have a show hanging to scare everybody from protesting. And as much as we've seen these protests in 09 and in 19, we have not seen anything like this. People say that we're at a place we have not seen before. And even the foreign minister on with Bret Baier last night admitted it started because of the economic distress that the whole country's in because of the ineptness of their government. Dennis Ross is a William Davis Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, author of Statecraft 2.0, and one of the most respected Middle East minds we have in America. Ambassador, welcome back. Has the window passed for the overthrow of this government?
I don't think the window has passed, because I want to pick up on what you were saying. What makes this different this time is just the fundamental failure in the delivery of basic governance. You have a country that can't provide water. There is nothing more basic than that. During the summer, you had 6 to 7 hours a day where water wasn't available in a city like Tehran, where temperatures routinely ran over 100 degrees Fahrenheit for more than 3 weeks at a time. Water's not available, I said, doesn't get more basic than that. A country that produces natural gas and oil, right now, they have to have electricity cutoffs, again, multiple hours a day, in a way that hard to fathom if you produce natural gas and oil. And the irony is now, again, because of the corruption, the mismanagement, the ineptness, the word you use, which is quite apt, they are burning diesel in their power plants because they can't get sufficient natural gas to their power plants, so you can't breathe the air. The currency has absolutely no value. 1.5 million reals to the dollar. The official exchange rate was supposed to be like 42,000. What started this were the merchants, the bazaaris. By the way, go back to 1978, 79. What started the fall of the Shah was the bazaaris going on strike. The same thing here, because you can't sell, you can't buy, people can't get basic foodstuffs, and this regime has no answers. They can kill, and they're doing it. When the president says, you know, they said they're not going to be killing, they don't do the execution. If there's no killing, the regime will fall. So there will be more killings. Now, what's happened now, they put large forces on the street. People are now, I would use the term shuttering in place. They're not going out. Doesn't mean it won't happen again. But the truth is, the regime only exists on the basis of coercion. The regime needs the people to be basically governed by fear. There is even though they've killed very large numbers of people, I'm not sure the fear has disappeared. I think it's all connected to a regime that has no answers, a regime that continues to squander the few resources it has on a regional proxy network that has largely been devastated, a regime that committed at least half a trillion dollars over the years to a nuclear infrastructure, which has all now been set back dramatically. The weakness on the outside translates into a weakness on the inside. So even if they're able to suppress their population right now, the days of this regime are numbered. If not now, in the coming year, if not in the coming year, the next year. What's going to happen, Brian, is the people who are doing, who are shooting the protesters are people themselves who don't have access to water. They have the same problem with power outages, same problem when they can't buy anything. The leaders of the besieged, the militia, or the Revolutionary Guard, or the regime itself, they have no problem with any of that. They have no problem with money. They can get whatever they want. And the fact is, sooner or later, the people who are called on to shoot the demonstrators, their own families are facing all these same shortages, knowing the regime has no answer.
So Iran is using a threat against President Trump, saying, showing the picture of him getting shot in the ear in Butler, and saying this time it will not miss the target, as if they were involved in the shooting. And then the foreign minister wants us to all believe this. Cut 25. I'm sorry.
After that 10 days, for 3 days, we had completely different story. A terrorist operation, when terrorist elements led from outside, you know, entered this, you know, protests and started to shoot, you know, police forces, police officers and security forces. There were terrorist cells. They came in. They used Daesh-style terrorist, you know, operations. They got police officers, burned them alive, they beheaded them, and they started shooting at police officers and also to the people. So as a result, for 3 days, we had, in fact, fighting against terrorists and not, you know, with the protesters. It was completely a different story.
So do you believe that?
Let's put it this way. If that was the truth, why has Iran completely shut down the internet? Why has it stopped basically all telecommunications? If that was the case, they're trying to keep the truth from their own people. They're trying to prevent their own people from being able to communicate. If this was really an outside kind of agitation that was producing, at first it wouldn't produce tens of thousands of people on the street. It wouldn't be involved in every single province. All 31 provinces of Iran are being shaken by these protests. This is, talk about a grassroots upheaval. This isn't fomented from the outside. This is being driven entirely from the inside. And again, I just repeat, if this is from the outside, tell me why you have to shut down the internet and not only blind your own people to what's going on, but try to cut off all information to the outside world. If you had nothing to hide, you wouldn't be trying to hide everything.
So the our allies in the Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, saying to us, please don't bomb. We don't want the unrest. Or do they not want the idea of the people rising up overthrowing government?
I think that's unsettling for them, for sure. Although, I mean, I don't think it's an equivalent situation because the fact is they actually do deliver good governance.
Yes.
It's just the opposite.
And then Iran's their enemy.
Right. But what's the fear is this. The fear is we will hit Iran. They can't really do enough to us, but they can hit our friends. And there's not a lot that we'll be able to do from them hitting our friends. I understand the psychology, but I would just sort of say we've learned something a long time ago. When you try to buy calm, all you're doing is postponing the point when you'll face the storm. So I understand it. Look, if you're sitting there and you would prefer, you know, your whole focus, you look at the Saudis, the Emiratis, their whole focus is on transforming their countries and their economies, the effort at modernization. Everything they're doing is exactly what countries should be doing in the Middle East. It creates a new model that your purpose is to deliver good governance. That's what they're trying to do, develop economies that are digitally driven, use AI, become leaders in all of this. That's what they want, and they understand, and this is fair. You need calm to be able to do that. The problem is the sooner this regime in Iran disappears, the better it is for everybody. They will reap the benefit of it. There's one other factor I would say. It's a paradox. They see now Iran is much weaker. Iran is much less capable of threatening anybody. Their whole regional proxy network can't intimidate or coerce the way it could. So, again, they think, look, if we have calm,
no Syria as an ally,
they're not a threat. Yeah. I mean, Syria was, you know, was a threat. So now they look at this as an environment that has been transformed. A weak Iran, from their standpoint, and there's a point here, is better than a chaotic Iran, a completely failed state where who knows what goes. That's, I think, is also part of their calculus. But again, I would say, think about the falling, Brian. This regime falls. What happens in Iraq? suddenly all the Shia militias there know they don't have, that are being backed by Iran. They lose that. You change the balance of forces within Iraq, much for the better. What happens in Lebanon? Hezbollah understands, okay, there's no longer any kind of lifeline from Iran. They have to basically readjust their own behavior. You give the Lebanese government, which is moving in fits and starts, much more of an incentive to reestablish Lebanese sovereignty. Syria doesn't face the Iranian effort to try to produce an insurgency against the new regime. I mean, you're facing a Middle East that changes much for the better. And it, by the way, again, I come back, this regime may not fall now, but its days are numbered. If it's not now, it'll be sometime in the coming year, because let's say they succeed in suppressing the protests right now. They may. They may have killed enough people that for the time being, the public needs a respite. Nothing that has produced in the first place will change. So something will trigger a new bound. So, you know,
the 86-year-old could die, too, the Ayatollah, and that might be an opening.
Look, I will say this. Before this round of protests, my view about the possible collapse of the regime was tied to succession. Because in an authoritarian regime where there are no rules for what happens in succession, the competition is in the elite itself, not with the public, but in the elite itself. And someone in the elite will decide, look, the way we'll gain an advantage and gain a sense of legitimacy is by reaching out to the public to show we'll deliver something. When that happens, then you have conflict within the elite. That's when the potential for real change comes. So that was my anticipation, my analysis prior to these protests. But these protests, given the character of the protests, given the scope of the protests, given the fact that it's not just all the provinces, it's also the countryside. The rural areas, as you know, are always more conservative socially. And they were the base politically of this regime. This regime had, I would say, 30% support from the population. It resided principally in the rural areas. Well, even that's gone now. So that's why I'm saying its days are numbered. I don't know if it happens now. Maybe it doesn't happen now, but it's going to happen. It's coming.
So armed Kurdish separatist groups tried to cross into Iran from Iraq in recent days, stoking fears that the country's spiraling unrest has attached dangerous foreign militants who could destabilize the wider region. And if you talk about the Kurds on the move and expanding, that gets Turkey unsettled, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, we're seeing an interesting reality, and it comes back to the question you asked about the Gulf states, but this probably relates to Turkey as well. They prefer calm in the near term. I understand it. It's completely understandable. But again, you're buying a short-term calm, and all it does is build up greater pressures for what could be a bigger upheaval later on. So sometimes you basically have to say, if we take this step now, we are avoiding what is a much bigger blow-up later.
Dennis, real quick, we move on to phase two in Gaza, and that means Hamas has to disarm. Where do you think we're at? I mean, we're doing everything possible to do this orderly. We got the world involved, setting up a peace council, trying to get an international force. What do you hear?
I think we're still not there yet in terms of an international force that will play the kind of role, but I also think we're at an interesting point. It's interesting that Hamas doesn't like to be isolated. And if we play this the right way, and what I mean by that, I mean we should be establishing public criteria right now for what a credible process on disarmament will look like. I think Hamas will try to put some kind of show that will be a sham. There should be first a division between the kinds of weapons that threaten Israel and the kinds of weapons that preserve Hamas control. So the former are, you know, the rockets, the anti-tank missiles, the mortars, the RPGs. Those should be the first phase. And there should be a time schedule for and a location for where each of these disarming moves or decommissioning takes place. The second phase needs to involve the AK-47s and the Kalashnikovs. So those don't threaten Israel, but they give Hamas the ability to control the population. That has to be the second phase. Again, you have to find locations. The key to this is going to be putting very significant pressure on Turkey and Qatar to put pressure on the external Hamas to ensure they do this. Now, once you do that, then Israeli withdrawal can begin to take place, and also reconstruction can begin to place. One last point on this. The Israeli zone is 53%. It's called the green zone in Gaza. The Hamas control zone is 47%. But only 30,000 of the 2 million Gazans live in the Israeli green zone. So you can begin to try to redo reconstruction in the green zone, but it affects very few people. If you're going to allow large numbers to move in, Hamas will infiltrate the movement from the red zone to the green zone. So the Board of Peace, the Executive Committee, this Technocratic Palestinian Day-to-Day Governance Committee, and even the International Stabilization Force, they need to be able to operate also in the red zone. The most important thing is to show you have an alternative to Hamas.
Yeah.
I would have preferred that the Board of Peace would have been created much sooner, because Hamas has entrenched itself and they've been able to say, hey, there's not an alternative to us. We need to use this alternative to show the public in Gaza, okay, Hamas is not inevitably going to control Gaza forever. Now we have a process that is moving in that direction.
My sense is if they don't, the Israelis will go back in and they don't have to worry about the health of the hostages this time. Dennis Ross, thanks so much. There's so much going on, and there's nobody better to talk to. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to be with you, as always.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Based on the science, can men get pregnant? That's a yes or no question. It really is, I think.
I think you're trying to reduce the complexity of a lot.
I'm not. I'm trying to get, it's not complex. I'm trying to get to an answer, and I'm trying to test, frankly, your veracity as a medical professional and as a scientist. Can men get pregnant?
I think you're also conflating male and female with...
No, I'm not conflating male and female. They're two different things. There's biological men and there's biological women. And I want to know, can men get pregnant?
What you were talking about is biological...
You're not going to answer my question, it sounds like.
So this loser of a woman, her name is Dr. Nisha Verma, an OBGYN, wants to talk about gender issues, but won't say something as basic as, of course, a man can't get pregnant. Then they talk about a living uterus and all that. Uterus live in women, okay? Men can't get pregnant. We used to be afraid to say that. I never used to be. You never used to be. But people are like, don't get involved. Because, you know, you got Ketanji Brown, the Supreme Court Justice, would not tell you what a woman is. Remember? Cut 44.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
The meaning of the word woman is so unclear and controversial that you can't give me a definition?
She should recuse herself from the whole debate on these transgenders in sports issues. Because if she doesn't know what a woman is, how are we supposed to have her rule on this? This is how crazy this world is. ICE is the problem, and we and men can give birth. Great to be an American.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, this is the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am back from Germany. Thanks so much for listening. You know, the American Forces network was fantastic, and we're able to go over there to Germany and bring you up close and personal with the men and women who serve and the commanding officers who are trying to get us ready for the next war. And we know there's going to be one. We'll have a simulcast with Stuart Varney, and Matt Terrell will be with us, Marco Rubio's former chief of staff. If you have an emerging, there's a lot of emerging stars in the Trump team. And one of which is Secretary of State, National Security Advisor Marco Rubio. Matt Terrell, I've known it too. You know how talented he is. But the way he got off to a rocky start with President Trump and how close they are right now, you cannot have more mutual respect between two people than those two people. So we'll talk about that. And also the challenges yesterday in Greenland. The vice president and secretary of state sat down with Denmark officials and Danish officials and just said, we want it. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Well, there's no question about it, and the Chinese lose because Venezuela has a huge amount of rare earth materials, and if that turns out to be pro-American rather than pro-Chinese, they just took an enormous hit strategically.
They did, and they want the Chinese, Russians, and Hezbollah out. Venezuela looks to be playing ball. What's left of the Maduro misfits shows a willingness to work with the U.S. as the true leader joins Donald Trump in the Oval Office today, the one whose party was elected. How long until the elections, everyone?
Number two.
If you listen to the president's words, it's clear that right now there's a little bit of a pause. He's fixated on the fact that there were no hangings. And so we'll have to see in the days ahead.
Yes, that was Jennifer Griffin. Iran's regime on the brink as Trump rattles their cage and the region shakes. We'll talk about the stakes and the strategy and my hope that the evil government falls.
Number one.
Tonight, I want to share another way you can help. Witness. Help us establish a record of exactly what's happening in our communities. You have an absolute right to peacefully film ICE agents as they conduct these activities.
Minneapolis mayhem, another ICE-related shooting in the city inspired by its leaders. Harass ICE doing their jobs as Trump doubles and triples down. Plus, we look at the uncovering of even more massive fraud. So let's talk about that. First, let's talk about what happened. A ICE agent shot a Venezuelan illegal immigrant in the leg. Well, what would happen there? Did the ICE agent just get angry? He wake up on the wrong side of the icy bed? Or could this be the case? At 6:50, federal law enforcement officers were conducting a targeted traffic stop in Minneapolis of an illegal alien from Venezuela who was released in 2022 by Joe Biden. In an attempt to evade arrest, the subject runs. And they fled on foot. The law enforcement officer caught up to him on foot and attempted to apprehend him. But then he began to resist and violently assaulted the officer. Now, by the way, why are these guys alone? I don't know. We got 3,000 there. They shouldn't be alone. While the subject and law enforcement were in a struggle on the ground, two Minnesota residents came out and started beating up the ICE officer with brooms and shovels. Can you imagine that? And then the subject started beating him up, too. So all three of them. So the ICE agent took out, shot him in the leg, got him, and we ended up hooking up with him. Locking him up, I should say. So the ICE agent, guess what, is being vilified. People start protesting in the streets. Not can thank you for getting a criminal off the street in Minneapolis, but getting him, but going for him and wanting him released. On the rhetoric by the Minnesota leaders that led to this, according to the DHS, the attack on another brave member of law enforcement took place while Minnesota's top leaders, Waltz and Fry, are actively encouraging an organized resistance to ICE and federal law enforcement officers, too. Their hateful rhetoric and resistance against men and women who are simply doing their jobs must end. I agree. And then you have Mayor Fry coming out saying, well, they have so many here, there's more ICE agents and cops, because you don't let your cops cooperate and because your cops aren't arresting anybody. Here's the ridiculous, embarrassing mayor. Cut four.
This is not creating safety. It's certainly not creating safety when a huge percentage of the shootings that have taken place so far this year in Minneapolis have been by ICE. So let's be very clear. I've seen conduct from ICE that is disgusting and is intolerable. If it were your city, it would be unacceptable there too.
Let's get this straight. If you are illegal and you're in a car and they stop you and you don't get out of the car, they will take you out of the car. I don't care how it looks. If you're an illegal criminal, more than one person will take you out of the car. But if you overstage a visa, you refuse to go, you refuse to take the $3,000 to get on a plane and go home, then you're going to be sent out. That is not intolerable. That is not horrible. That is not terrorist activity. That's what they do. Cut five.
This, however, is the largest immigration enforcement action on record in the United States. And so I would just ask you, why is the largest scale immigration enforcement action taking place where we don't even have that many undocumented immigrants? Why would it not take place in Texas or Florida or Utah, where you do actually have those large numbers of undocumented immigrants? Because that's where it would actually make more sense. But again, if the issue is murder,
here's the deal. They are there. They are in Utah. They are in Florida, but they are getting cooperation with the local authorities. Nothing but resistance and radicalization by you guys. I don't know if you've met the president. You probably never will, and you shouldn't, because you're not worthy of meeting him. But mayor, if you go and triple down and you make ICE the target, they don't leave. They double and triple down. The president doesn't cower. They double and triple down because the objective is to get illegal immigrant criminals out, then illegal immigrants out. And in Minnesota, Minneapolis, you have militarized and radicalized your citizens. It is sickening to think you are still in charge of a city. The only reason you are is because some unqualified Somali who could barely speak English and was going against you and you barely won the election was actually campaigning with a Somali flag in the background. For some reason, not a Republican could run there. And I thought this is interesting. So you know that Renee Good was shot and killed as she evaded and mocked ICE agents and tried to block the road and then hit an ICE agent who had to go to the hospital 2 days ago because of internal bleeding. But everyone says he wasn't hit, even though you hear him being hit on camera. So she was liked men for a while. Now she likes women. When she liked men and married one, she had a father-in-law. That father-in-law's Timmy Macklin said this about Renee. Cut 10.
Renee was an amazing person. I mean, she full of life, full of joy. I mean, real gentle, a good mother. You know, I just think, you know, we make bad choices. I don't blame ICE. I don't blame Rebecca. I don't blame Renee. I just wish that, you know, if we're walking in the spirit of God, I don't think she would have been there. That's the way I look at it.
Yes, she might have been nice, but she wasn't doing anything but blocking law enforcement from doing that job. And if you get in their way, if you try to drive over them, even if you're nice, you will pay the price. Hopefully not with your life, but certainly significant jail time, I hope, to make sure the next one doesn't start. So it is unbelievably agonizing and angry. You know, this morning I got up after coming back from Germany. I was a little sluggish. And then when I started reading these stories about the shooting last night, I literally started I just woke right up. It might have been 12 noon. And I'm talking about being in the car at 2:50 after getting off a plane from Germany, which is 6 hours ahead. So this is just insane. There's a lot of other things going on. I never thought in my life I'd be talking about Greenland ever, let alone almost every day. But yesterday there was a meeting with the Secretary of State and Vice President with Greenland officials and Danish officials, at which time the president made it clear we need it. Strategically, we need it. To me, this is all the makings of a very good deal for us. We tell Denmark, you can run it, but we're going to need access to a massive airbase and access to their rare earth. Not because we want to rob it, is because for our security and the security of NATO, we need to be able to get NATO and ourselves the rare earth that China seems to possess. Here's Doug Burgum, cut 34.
Think about Alaska, which we also purchased, is so strategic now, both in terms of energy, but also in terms of our military bases there. And the same thing with Greenland. These are like two bookends that protect North America. And as you know, today, we're in an era of unmanned warfare. Through my life growing up in North Dakota, we were filled with missiles because of the over the Arctic attack that could become. We were the defensive front line for protecting America. But early detection matters, and having that position in Greenland and Alaska is critical to the safety. As President Trump said today, the great leadership that he's providing Commander-in-Chief, the Golden Dome, we need Greenland to make sure the Golden Dome is going to protect America.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment. I don't want to take too much time from Matt Terrell, who is Marco Rubio's former chief of staff, but I will be taking calls. I see the lines are jammed. So I'll be taking calls at the bottom of the hour, but stay on board in the order in which you called so I can get to you, and then we'll do a simulcast with Varney and Company. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I can tell you that now it is 4 days that everything is calm. There is no demonstration. There is no unrest, nothing in Iran for the past 4 days. Yes, there has been millions of people today for funerals. And 2 days ago, a big rally in support of the government and of the system. So people are on the streets, but in support of the Islamic Republic.
Right. We're support of the people. And we made that clear. 2009, it wasn't clear from Obama and it wasn't clear under Biden, but it's clear under Trump that he supports the people. But what are our options? Secretary of State Marco Rubio, as National Security Advisor, he is in charge of finding out those options. And he's been giving it to the president, who first off said, I don't want to hear about any hanging. And it stopped. We have reports in six provinces of these security forces, the Revolutionary Guard, just shooting into crowds. Let's go to Matt Terrell now, Marco Rubio's former chief of staff. Matt, welcome. Appreciate you being with us. What do you think our options are, and how much pressure is on Rubio's shoulders to get something that we can, that the president could do without being part of a war?
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you. In terms of options, we'll have to see what takes shape here. Clearly, President Trump has already deployed a few different options. The first one was his rhetoric. You know, look, President Obama was silent when people in Iran took to the streets to protest. President Trump has not been silent. He's made it clear to the people of Iran that he has their back. So that's critical. The other option has been economic. You know, look, deploying the tariffs on Iran, that's been important. Obviously, putting economic pressure on the regime in Iran is key. But to your question, you know, the question is going to be, what are the military potential capabilities that are put in place or other capabilities? It could be cyber attacks. It could be, you know, trying to continue to work through, open up information throughout the country so that Iranian protesters can continue to have open access to the internet, to mobilize, to coordinate. We'll see what takes shape here. But look, using a golf analogy, you know, there's different clubs you can use. You got a driver, you got a pitching wedge. President Trump uses all of his clubs really well when it comes to foreign policy. And we'll see what he does here. And I think we'll know soon.
Here's what the foreign minister went on to say, cut 27.
We negotiated with the United States several times, and all of them turned into a very negative experience. In 2015, we negotiated for 2.5 years. We concluded the deal, and the United States decided to withdraw with no reason and with no justification. So why we should engage into negotiation with the United States, which means, in fact, you know, when United States talk about negotiation, it means they want dictation and not negotiation.
So I don't think we should be talking to them at all. We already blew up their nuclear program. They're going to try to build it back along with their ballistic missile program. I never trusted them. And this is just sort of the garbage they throw out.
Well, to your point, Brian, which is a good one, you know, Iran has missed past negotiation deadlines. Think about when President Trump did take military action to obliterate Iran's nuclear capabilities. The reason why he took that military action was really a last resort. Iran failed to come to the negotiating table. You know, as you and I think both recognize, when President Trump puts a line in the sand and says, don't cross it, don't cross it. And I think what the regime here in Iran needs to understand is that President Trump is going to put a line out there. He already has, in terms of telling them to stop the killing. It appears, and again, President Trump has the best intelligence here, and he is saying that it appears that the killing has stopped, that a scheduled hanging has not been moved forward with in Iran by the regime. We'll have to see what happens next year. But if the Iranian regime has any question about what President Trump will do, just go ask Nicolas Maduro. Nicolas Maduro found out what the Trump doctrine is all about. Mess around and find out.
And also
I
June.
I highly encourage the regime not to do that.
Also June, when they blew up their nuclear program, the Nigerian capture of the Christians, they paid a price. They killed two of our guys in Syria. ISIS got pounded again last weekend. Real quick, let's pivot to politics for a second. You see the unrest with ICE in the streets in Chicago, in Portland, in Seattle, and especially in Minneapolis. This center-left Democratic group, Third Way Memo, said in the wake of Good's death, a growing number of disturbing immigration enforcement incidents, calls to abolish ICE have once again surged on the left. The impulse is emotional. The slogan is simple, but politically it's lethal. Every call to abolish ICE risks squandering one of the clearest opportunities in years to secure meaningful reform on immigration enforcement. So they're doing it again, aren't they?
Look, all President Trump is doing is enforcing the law that's on the books. The bottom line is that President Obama used ICE to deport illegal immigrants from this country. President Trump is doing the exact same thing. And look, you know, the politics of this, I think, are clear. The number one poll that matters is the one that takes place on Election Day. In the 2024 presidential election, the issue of illegal immigration, border security, that was on the ballot. And President Trump won the popular vote in the Electoral College, not only on the economy or inflation, but on what he would do on border security. He is fulfilling his campaign promise. And I don't believe that the people who are protesting on this in the streets represent where the majority of Americans are. And we are in an election year right now. And yes, the economy is going to be on the ballot in these 2026 midterm elections. So too will be safety. So too will be security. President Trump is enacting the laws in the books to make our neighborhoods safer, to deport people from the country who are here illegally. And in many cases, if you look at Minneapolis, these are violent criminals. You know, think about rape, sexual assault. These are horrific acts that people have conducted who have been in this country illegally. I don't think it's a good look for Democrats right now, and I don't think it's a winning argument for Democrats heading into November here.
I know, and plus just vilifying law enforcement, telling them to go out and follow them, track them, and basically get in their way, which is, why is this acceptable? And I think cops got to start speaking out, too, just because they're not ICE agents. They're law enforcement. I'd love to see cops start speaking out in support. Matt, Marco Rubio's stock has gone way up in this country, certainly with Donald Trump. Surprise you?
Not at all. Look, right now, what Secretary Rubio has is the mega halo. You know, if you're in President Trump's cabinet or working with him, and he has trust and respect for you, he gives you more to do. We've seen Secretary Rubio now have numerous jobs in the cabinet. Obviously, the Secretary of State was taking on a very broad portfolio. He's got that mega halo right now. It's something he has earned. And we'll see, you know, where everything goes here, but he's done a fantastic job as Secretary of State. The country right now, the world right now, needs a strong Secretary of State. We had that in Marco Rubio.
No question. And National Security Advisor, and he's head of archives, I think, too. Matt, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Listen, we come back, I'll be able to take some calls. 1-866-408-7669. My first stop will be in New Jersey, then Montana, then over to Pennsylvania, and maybe even Texas and Chicago. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. A lot more coming up. Don't move.
Show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, there's no question about it. And the Chinese lose because Venezuela has a huge amount of rare earth materials. And if that turns out to be pro-American rather than pro-Chinese, they just took an enormous hit strategically. And finally, I'll just say to everybody, watch what happens when we take on Russian and Chinese air defenses. They don't hit a single plane. No. We go in, we do what we need to do, we get out. Yeah. Their value as their military leaders have to be very worried about whether or not they could function in a world in which the Americans were acting.
We shut the lights and we used some type of weapon that had them vomiting and blood coming out their nose and ears. Pretty amazing. That was what happened in Venezuela. Remember the devastating effects on Iran, that we don't look to stick around. We just look to send a message. Our goal is not to occupy or dominate. It's look to eliminate an adversary and our security concerns while sticking up for our allies. That's admirable and that's actionable. That's a big difference. We're not talking. This president takes action. Jackie, you're in New Jersey. Hey, Jackie.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. I wanted to reference your segment with Dennis Ross and the next thing that's going to happen in Gaza, the disarmament of Hamas and the reconstruction of Gaza. But I think we're forgetting the fact that they're still holding one hostage, one soldier there. And when you mentioned that there were no hostages that we, you know, had to worry about their health and if we go in and, you know, have to do things there, but there is a hostage there. Well, and then and that body deserves to go back to Israel to be buried properly.
No, that's true, but sadly, that fighter, that Israeli, lost his life already. So I'm saying that if you have to go in and wipe out Hamas, there's no longer 70 hostages Israelis sitting underneath the ground. So it's the gloves are off.
Yeah, that he lost his life already. But, you know, with this past war and, you know, October 7th, it took 11 years to get back Hadar Golden and the other soldier that were killed in the incursion of 2014. And I'd hate to see another 11 years or more incursions or whatever it has to be to get this boy back to his parents so he can be buried in Israel.
The main thing is to eliminate the Hamas as a legitimate threat to all of Israel. And if you could not only make sure there's a regime change from its own hands in Iran, they finance Hamas or do a lot of the financing, and as Hezbollah, billions of dollars. That'll go a long way. And I think they're really trying to get to that phase two. They're there now. So the next step is really get that international force in place, allow the IDF to go home and recuperate, and then get that Council of Peace running. Lauren over in Montana. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning. I appreciate it lot. I listen to you every morning when I'm taking my kids to school. Yeah, I just was telling your screener that I really kind of wanted to comment on, you know, kind of what's going on in Minneapolis, but not specifically Minneapolis. I think that, you know, ICE agents are doing a really hard job, and I really think that what they're doing is a great thing to deport illegal immigrants. But at the same time, I want to highlight the fact that it is very possible and very likely even that there are some ICE agents that are just simply walking up to people and saying, papers, please. I mean, like it's Nazi Germany. You know, you look Hispanic, you're talking Spanish, or you look Somali.
Yeah,
or
I'm not for
whatever.
That either, Warren, but how often do you think that's happening?
I think it's happening enough. I think one time is too much. I think it's happening enough to where that is what's causing people
to... But you're going through second and third hand reports. Now, I understand, but when they're chasing somebody down, they're doing it for everybody.
I agree. I think that they're doing a great job. I think that, you know, that they're there to pick up, you know, criminals, illegals. But, you know, you hear a report of, you know, a group of ICE agents that go to Home Depot and just stand there. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys standing on the corner trying to find a job, whether they're illegal or not. They have no right to just, these guys are standing there. They have no right to walk up to those guys and say, you need to prove to me that you are here legally. There's no, that is a direct violation of our Fourth Amendment.
Right. But are they subject to our Fourth Amendment if they're here illegally, many of which have broke the law?
Yes, they are, actually. The Constitution actually specifically states that anybody in the United States is subject to our Constitution, whether they're citizens or not.
I think that I think that, number one, they want to tape everything. Let's see it. They want to tape it because someone's getting ripped out of a car. They think it's cruel. That person get ripped out of a car because there's a warrant for them. Like this woman yesterday, I watched a CNN panel on CNN International, and they put this woman getting taken out of a car. And they go, okay, now here's a Republican, here's a Democrat comment on it. And the Republican says, well, what's the circumstances? He goes, we don't know. It looks terrible. It looks terrible. We don't know what she did. Did she try to run over an ICE agent? Is she working with TDA? You know, is she commit a crime? Is she a fraudster? You know, it's in Minneapolis, more than likely. It seems like everybody was on the take. You know, what is the circumstances? But I'm with you, Lauren. If you're walking up to a Home Depot and just saying, show me that you belong here, we should not be doing that. So I'm with you on that. Brian in Clarion, Pennsylvania. Hey, Brian.
Hey, welcome home, Brian.
Thank you.
My husband and I love your show. We love President Trump, and all eyes are on Iran. And in my research, I wanted to find out some things. I was shocked to discover that the fastest growing religion in Iran is Christianity. And I couldn't believe that. I saw numbers up to 500,000. I have a letter into the Secretariat for Pope Leo XIV for clarification. And, you know, we pray to the Blessed Virgin for conversion, and she's recognized in the Quran. And I know it's economic, this uprising, but what do you think about that as a factor in the unrest in Iran? Because
maybe.
I haven't heard
about
it.
You're telling me, Brian, you're telling me something I did not know. So I just know this, when very smart people realize they're being run by very stupid, evil people, that's a combination for an overthrow. And this guy, who hopefully will be dead soon, this Grand Ayatollah, I think he should. I'd love to see him pack his bags and go to Moscow. Nobody wants that regime in Iran. I don't want to run Iran. I don't want I just want a country that doesn't export terror and try to destroy Israel. That's all I ask for. Hank in Virginia. Hey, Hank.
Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I think Marco Rubio would be the perfect 48th president. I know Trump will probably let the GOP primary up. I like J.D. Vance, but I feel Rubio has a unique story, and a second-generation Cuban-American fluent in Spanish would bring more people under the GOP tent. And a VP ticket I would pick either Kelsey Gabbard or Governor Huckabee of Arkansas.
I think Huckabee's got of Arkansas, not Governor the ambassador. I think she's going to be a contender. I think she'd be great, so competent and now so experienced. I like both. I think JD is very smart. I worry about the isolationist stuff. I worry about him being too close to the wacko podcasters out there. Not so much. You could be friends with anyone. I just don't want you to copy their philosophy. And I noticed that he was not, you know, I remember in the Signal chat, he was not for hitting the Houthis, which was unthinkable to me. The Houthis were shutting off the Red Sea. And number two is he was not around. I don't know if it's coincidence or not during the Venezuelan operation. And I'm wondering it's because maybe he wasn't for it. So that's a good point. I appreciate it. And I think Rubio and J.D. Vance might be a ticket. But I also worry about doing what Democrats do and anointing somebody and letting them run out. I think Ted Cruz is going to run for president. I think Governor DeSantis could run for president. I think there's Kristi Noem might run for president. I think Sean Duffy could run, too. Would they? I think Governor Abbott could run for president. So I think we might have a full stage. This just in. John Harbaugh, who was first reported to be heading to the Giants late Wednesday by Paul Schwartz, reportedly will command upwards of $20 million per season on a five-year contract. Harbaugh is set to make $100 million with the deal. The deal puts him right in the Kansas City's Andy Reid and Sean Payton range and deserves it. Reid is the league's highest-paid coach. I'll add to that. I think it's done at $20 million a year with the Giants' five-year deal. He went to the Giants, spent all day there, and then they had dinner, and then he went home on one of the owner's planes, Steve Tisch, and then they talked again, and word is he gave their word they're just working out the small part, the small print on the contract. It's done. And the word is Tom Coughlin called him. The word is not only did Tom Coughlin call him, Brian Daboll spoke to him and said what a class organization it is. So that would be great news. It would be great news for our show because he'd be calling in all the time. Gary in Chicago. Hey, Gary.
This is kind of a follow-up with what Lauren was saying, but I'm seeing several news resources stating that the data shows that 5% of ICE detainees are criminals and the majority are non-criminals.
I heard that was 100% not correct.
Then where are they getting their data from? And I think ICE needs to do a better job of publications or something, signage, to show the truth of what's going on. I keep getting, you know, you're getting both sides.
Hey, Gary, the whole thing is, too, fundamentally, if you get an illegal immigrant out of the country who came here illegally or you broke the laws, I'm fine with that. The way we do it does matter, though, but it's not like they're getting people that belong in America out of America.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. In a little while, we're going to go on with Stuart Varney and talk a little about what's happening with ICE and what's happening overseas, what's going on in Iran, some of the hottest stories in the country. I don't remember a time when we're talking so much about world affairs, from Iran to what happened in Gaza to Greenland to China to Venezuela, the future of Cuba. We're just not used to it. Mexico's worried that we're going to hit their country and their cartels. In fact, one of the stories that's not getting reported much because of the volume is that we're asking Mexico if we can hit their cartels. Let's listen.
It's time for Brian Kilmeade. Take a look at this op-ed from the Journal. America is the sole superpower again. I say that's really good news, Brian. And question, are we pulling ahead of China?
No question about it. And how do you define a superpower? Nuclear weapons, of course. But can you project economic and military power, not just on your shores, not just as a country, but around the world? Anyone deny that we're projecting power around the world? Do you have to tell anyone in Venezuela we're projecting power in the world or Cuba because what happens next? Or do you have to describe to the Ayatollah that America is omnipresent when it comes to their evil regime, when it comes to reaching out to us from protesters, or are we reaching out to them blowing up their nuclear weapons? Or look what happened in Gaza. The Russians can't do this. The Chinese can't do this. South Koreans or Japan can't do this. The EU or any European nation can't do it. But we're doing, which makes it so unique in the world, in world history, is we're not doing it to dominate. Gain influence, sure. Economically, we want you to grow. We want to be a partner with you. Give friends and families discounts, sure. But what do we get out of rebuilding Gaza, setting up a peace council and a phase one and a phase two? A chance at a region that is a tinderbox my entire life, and maybe you'll be able to dial it down. Be able to walk over to the Gulf states and have a visit and walk out with economic deals and know you can execute. Have an economy that's growing between 2 and 5% regularly. Have a military that's gone from $900 billion and the president wants to get up to $1.6 trillion. All this is on the resume of a superpower.
Yeah.
There's no other nation that has that on their resume.
It's going our way. Things are looking up. I sense a change of mood, much more optimistic. Absolutely. These days. Much more optimistic. But let me change the subject just briefly here. We've got more violent protests in Minneapolis after a second ICE-involved shooting in just a week. A vicious attack on ICE agents followed that latest shooting. What do you make of Governor Walz urging people to take photos of ICE agents so they can be prosecuted? What do you make of that?
Track them, hit your horn, make sure they're impeded. Impeded? Their mission is to get illegal immigrant criminals off the streets. Impeded? You want to know why there's 3,000? Very simple. Because when we put a number on the streets to work effectively, you told your citizens to get in their way. And then you told your cops to do nothing to help. Which, by the way, cops not helping cops, there's something intrinsically wrong with that. And number two is, you're looking at a group of people being vilified in a way in which James Carville and David Axelrod said that almost destroyed the Democratic Party. It's a version of defund the police. Now it's impede the police. And I look at this incident. There is no other flip side to it. An illegal immigrant criminal from Venezuela gets stopped, runs away. When they get contact, he starts trying to beat up the ICE agent.
Yeah.
When the neighbors see it, they jump in with broomsticks and shovels, and then all three of them beat this guy's up. By the way, why is he alone? That's another thing ICE got to answer. So he takes out a gun, shoots him in the leg, is able to bring him into custody, and then they riot in Minneapolis against the ICE agent. The world is upside down in that icy city, and they need leadership that's competent. But those are the people that put Walz in. They're the ones who keep Mayor Fry in. They're the ones that aren't outraged that most of the millions of dollars that comes for their social welfare programs, from autism to feeding the hungry, goes into the arms of Somalians who mail it overseas to terrorists. That's what's been happening for years. And now that we're exposing that on multiple levels, it looks like Trump's the bad guy and ICE has got to be stopped. Have you met President Trump? He doesn't cower. Have you seen ICE? They don't give in.
No, they're not going to give in. All right, Brian, good stuff today. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Stuart. It's just crazy what's happening over there. And now we're going to have another clash. Starting February 1st, anybody who has a sanctuary city is not going to get federal funds. Of course, when you do that, it goes back to the courts, and they're going to go wrestle back and forth to see if he can do it. But the whole sanctuary city policy, the way I understand it, was originally put in place in this way. So if you're here illegally and you're a victim of a crime, whether you're basically an indentured servant, because in lieu of if you go turn that person in, they're going to throw you out of the country too. You keep your mouth shut. So they say, listen, we'll give you sanctuary. If you're a victim of a crime, come forward. That won't be the reason we kick you out. But now it's being abused. That's where people go. That's when Joe Biden let millions in. They went to Chicago. They went to New York. They went to Philadelphia. They went to Portland. They went to San Francisco. They went to Los Angeles because they could live and breathe free. And they have a governor that says they're part of our neighborhoods. They're part of the fabric of our society. Instead of saying you're here illegally, you seem nice, but I know you're not. And I know you got to do things the right way. So, I mean, that's what's going on. I think politically, it's dynamite to that party, as in not good dynamite, as in will blow up your party, at least I hope. And by the way, when Stuart Varney is talking about a positive story, I know it seems weird, but it's true. We have a problem with China in our backyard. We stood up to them and we said, you got to kick China out. Have you heard anything from China complaining? Yeah, they made some statements. Iran, not only did they get bombed, they're now in the middle of civil strife. They've reached out to Iran for weapon systems and type of support and to maybe back us off. Not a word. In fact, one of the headlines to an editorial in the Wall Street Journal is, your friendship with China has its limitations. No joke. And as we see what's happening in Africa, pushing Russia back, you see what's happening in the Middle East, Russia virtually disappearing. Quick note, I hope to see everyone in Fort Myers, Florida, coming up on February 14th and then on May 30th in Reno, Nevada. History, Liberty, and Last, we go on stage, talk about this, and talk about our glorious past on our 250th birthday. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Don't move.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to talk to Josh Krosshauer and talk about the politics leading up to 2026 election, as well as what's happening as the Senate doesn't seem they're going to be doing anything on health care as the Senate goes to leave town. I think today we'll see if there's a last minute reprieve. There's some bipartisan bills kicking around about extending the subsidies. It's supposed to evaporate and have evaporated and affect about 4 million people in the country. It's important, but it's a failed program that the Republicans have been trying to get rid of, and now they feel as though they'll be hurt by looking like the one party trying to hurt people where it matters most, where they can relate to, and that's with health care. But keep in mind, it's a terrible health care program that has a $6,000 deductible on average. So we'll do that and also talk about this, what's happening overseas. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Well, there's no question about it, and the Chinese lose because Venezuela has a huge amount of rare earth materials, and if that turns out to be pro-American rather than pro-Chinese, they just took an enormous hit strategically.
That is so true. Venezuela looks to be playing ball. What's left of the Maduro misfits, showing a willingness to work with the U.S. and crack down on some of the crime in the streets, let out some political prisoners. There's going to be a meeting, though, with the rightful Democratic leader of Venezuela in the Oval Office today. My ears are perked.
Number two.
If you listen to the president's words, it's clear that right now there's a little bit of a pause. He's fixated on the fact that there were no hangings. And so we'll have to see in the days ahead.
Yep, that is Jennifer Griffin talking about Iran not hanging the 26-year-old as symbolic in a pushback against the riots that are causing great damage and unrest in the streets in every province in Iran. But has the moment been missed? Is this Ayatollah going to stay in power? We'll discuss.
Number one.
Tonight I want to share another way you can help. Witness. Help us establish a record of exactly what's happening in our communities. You have an absolute right to peacefully film ICE agents as they conduct these activities.
Oh, thank you for that, Governor. You are so over your head and corrupt. Minneapolis mayhem. Another ICE-related shooting as the city, inspired by its leaders, harass ICE doing their jobs, and as Trump doubles and triples down. Plus, we look at the uncovering of even more massive fraud. And that's where we'll begin. And talk about fraud. I could not believe what we're seeing. And now we're seeing in Minneapolis, this is part of the reason why they're all focused on ICE and they want to make ICE the bad guy, because the fraud is so embarrassing. Nick Shirley, who exposed the healthcare fraud and the daycare fraud, is now focusing on what's happening with truckers and transportation, getting millions of dollars to companies that don't exist. Cut 15.
So you guys were working off of a list here. Did you go to any addresses that had cars that were taking kids to daycares?
No, and I'm being 100% honest. There was not a single location we went to where there was cars that were moving people around Minnesota.
And you were calling the phone numbers, too. Did anybody pick up?
Yeah, well, I mean, like Quality Learning Center, for instance, that phone number went to nowhere. If you make a phone call to any of these locations, I mean, just going to the address is enough. There wasn't anyone even there. There wasn't even signs on a lot of these places. They were apartment buildings, so I mean, phone call wouldn't have done much.
So Nick Shirley is the independent YouTuber who's going to be actually asked to testify in front of Congress. So is the Attorney General. So is Governor Walz. I don't think they're showing up. According to Nick, His last video exposed over $110 million in fraud that Walz dropped to, that caused him to drop for a re-election. They found another $16 million, they believe, in fraud in a 51-minute video that was just released as he went around to these different transportation agencies. Cut 16.
You're out on the street. Is it clear that the politicians were clueless? I mean, how could they have not known about this?
Well, they obviously knew because they've enabled it to happen for so long. I mean, for instance, Quality Learning Center, it had over 90 violations, yet they kept giving that daycare millions of dollars. And these transportation companies, I mean, if anyone in Minnesota is watching this right now, they know what I'm talking about because you drive around Minneapolis and you'll see nobody inside of these transportation vehicles.
I mean, without giving away your logistics, what's next?
Well, I think there's a lot more fraud to be exposed across the country, and there might be more fraud to expose inside Minnesota. There's a lot of fraud, and the fraud is very, very, very deep in Minnesota.
And it is. The mayor and governor knee deep in it. And by the way, I'm shocked. They know it, and the attorney general knows it too. And that audio tape of the attorney general saying, hey, you know what? I'll look the other way if you just give me your votes. We're good on this. Who knows if he's even on the take? Who can see? But maybe the accountability will happen. But just so you know, mostly Somali community. I did a special with Maine yesterday with a whistleblower on Sunday on my One Nation show, 10 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday nights. Maine is a mess. Per capita, bigger than Minnesota. And then Benny Johnson, looking at the fraud in California. Keep an eye on his news feed. He's out there pointing out all the massive fraud, even though this governor says that he was Doge before Elon Musk got there. No one believes that, but that's what they're going with. So the other story is vilifying ICE. Do you think that'll work? Well, I'm one of the people who do not think it would work. And you know who else is? A lot of these so-called political experts on the left. There's this group that's center left. It's called Third Wave. And they put out a memo about everyone chanting abolish ICE. Quote, in the wake of Renee Good's death and a growing number of disturbing immigration enforcement incidents, calls to abolish ICE have once again surged. The impulse is emotional. The slogan is simple, but politically it is lethal. Every call to abolish ICE risks squandering one of the clearest opportunities and handing Republicans exactly the fight they want. This piece argues for a harder, smarter approach. Abolish abuses. Don't abolish ICE. End mass squads roaming American streets. End accountability, use of force. End an enforcement system so opaque that families lose loved ones onto a bureaucratic black box. Couple of things. Number one, that's a center left leaning organization. But the whole pushback has to be with skilled politicians, which ICE aren't, being able to say, here are the stats. We had a caller last hour who said, you know, they just made an announcement. You know, some Democrats said only 5% of the people being collected are criminals. And I know that's blatantly not true. 5% are criminals. So they say 72% are criminals. Others have overstayed their visas and ignored recalls where they have to go report. So they got to be taken out. But the other one's criminals, worst first, is it? Someone's got to come forward and explain the discrepancies. Tell me what's wrong with their numbers. Tell me why your number's right. That's why when people say, yeah, I'm for ICE, but they're getting non-criminals, people that support ICE and have other jobs or plumbers and pipe fitters or bankers, whatever, they don't know. They go, really, where'd you hear that? So they got to do a better job telling their story, but they're in the right. And I thoroughly believe that. So we'll discuss it. And the other thing is, when it comes to fraud, I think you got to find it even in Republican states. But the Republican states are actually acting on it. The governor in Ohio is finding the fraud. The governor Abbott of Texas is policing his own fraud. He's going to expose it. And if it happened under his watch, they would be lying to him about certain things, let's hear it. But the big story I wake up to in the middle of the night is another shooting in Minneapolis, and we got to find out what happened. Here's what the Minneapolis police chief said would happen. He's cut one.
At 6:51 p.m., Minneapolis police received a 911 call reporting a shooting on the 600 block of 24 Avenue North. Preliminary information indicates that there was a struggle with a federal agent in front of the resident. During the struggle, the federal agent discharged his weapon, striking one adult male. The adult male then retreated inside of the residence, where he remained inside and refused to come out. Eventually, federal agents made entry into the residence, and the individual was brought to an ambulance where he has been transported to the hospital.
So that is a situation where you have a guy, he runs from the police. Then when you catch him, he tries to beat you up. And when he can't, two people come running out of the apartment to help him, not the cop. And that's when he's shot. What do you want him to do? If you didn't do anything wrong and you belong here and you're not a criminal, you don't run. He ran. Deserves everything he got. He's lucky he got shot in the leg. When we come back, we go inside real estate and the economy. Right now, the market is surging up 374 points. Oil and gas is down. But what about the housing market? We'll discuss it with Pierre DeBoss next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think the reality is that for centuries, we've really treated property as an individualized good and not a collective good. And we are going to transitioning to treating it as a collective good and towards a model of shared equity will require that we think about it differently. And it will mean that families, especially white families, but some POC families who are homeowners as well, are going to have a different relationship to property than the one that we currently have.
So that is Zohra Mamdani's, I guess, housing czar, apartment czar, Sia Weaver. And she's basically a raging communist who you got to see her past. She's deleting like crazy, but you have to see her past tweets. It just shows you she has no interest or understanding of capitalism. But yet, she's the perfect one for Zohra Mamdani. Not a surprise to Pierre DeBoss, managing partner of Romer DeBoss. Pierre, welcome back. Hearing her has got to alarm you.
Brian, this is exactly what our fear was. When we talked 8 months ago, I said that these housing policies that he has in mind are pure forms of communism. Now, when you use phrases like the collective, what does a collective mean, right? The collective means that we take from private owners, we take control, and we decide how we distribute these assets and the use of these assets. So it's the collective phrase by itself is pure Marxism, right? So what they're trying to do, like what does that mean? We're going to change how housing is viewed and change how housing is operated. That means the government's going to take control of housing. Right.
Yeah.
And can the government go and repossess your building? No, they can't just say, hey, you know, we're going to enforce eminent domain and we're going to take over your building. But what they're going to do, and it's exactly what we predicted, they're going to create onerous regulations, which create distress in the market with the hopes of taking over buildings that are going to be valued at peanuts on the dollar from what they used to be.
Here's what Mamdani did defending his hiring of this lunatic.
I hired our executive director for the mayor's office to protect tenants, not on the basis of her tweets, but on the basis of the work that she has done. And she has won incredible victories for tenants across not just New York City, but also New York State. And I've been heartened to see the work that she's already done on the job here, where she's helping to coordinate rental ripoff hearings across each one of the five boroughs so that tenants have a place where they can actually come forward to showcase the many fees that they've been charged, the lack of adequate facilities that they've been provided right here in New York City, where the housing crisis is foremost. Top of mind for each and every New Yorker.
So how, does that surprise you and does that affect you?
It doesn't surprise me at all, but it affects the New York City economy, right? Because right now, who in their right mind would invest in New York City commercial real estate in terms of apartment buildings?
Yeah.
Who? We have the most tenant-friendly laws in America as it stands today. We have about a million rent-stabilized units in New York City. There's about 2.3 million rental units in all of New York City.
Right.
So roughly 40% of our stock is stabilized. That's a tremendous amount of affordable housing.
So that means it's never going to go up. So everything life goes up. Inflation's at 2.7%. Everything goes up. Hopefully wages goes up too.
Right.
But you can't have a capitalist system where the rent doesn't go up.
Right. Well, here's the thing, right? Like you want these landlords to rehab these buildings. You want them to maintain them. You want them to improve them.
With what money?
Precisely. What money? Where are you getting them? You have to get an ROI. There has to be an incentive to invest in your building, and there has to be cash flow, positive cash flow coming in. Rent freezes and all these concepts negate all of that entirely.
Yeah. So you predicted, number one, if he's going to do this, it might be a means to an end. And so if landlords go, if you're going to continue to prosecute me, if you're going to continue to stabilize me and prevent me from raising rents, I'm going to keep those apartments open. But if you keep those apartments open and you're still not making a profit,
right,
you abandon those properties. You go bankrupt.
But that's what they want. That's their goal, right? Like, this started in 2019. Like, de Blasio spearheaded the most sweeping change in rent regulations in New York City. Cuomo just blindly signed off on it. This was a whole initiative started in that administration. They want these buildings to be devalued to nothing so they can take them over. This, again, this is pure destruction by design. This is intentional. This is not like happenstance and, you know, we
so
just want to help tenants.
The city would have to run that building.
That's right. That's
where
correct.
Are we going to get that money? The city's already in the red.
By the way, it's going to cost billions of dollars to rehab these properties to get them up to the condition you want. The 100,000 units I'm talking about that are vacant right now, they're in dilapidated condition. So you're going to take these over and you're going to spend – where are you getting the money to rehab them? Where? Well,
you're getting it, but you have to take it from other programs, or you're going to raise taxes.
Right.
But you don't raise taxes as a mayor.
That's right.
So I don't know where they're going to go with that. So right now you said that for the most part, people haven't had a mass exodus since he took over.
Mm-hmm.
But these people that he's hiring has got to scare you.
Absolutely. I mean, look, what are we, 10 days into the administration? You know, I mean, this is pure lunacy. I mean, you're seeing the radicals he's hiring. And by the way, like, I mean, people keep saying, don't say the C word, don't say the C word. These are communists. Like, let's stop kidding ourselves, right? These are flat out communists. Like, it's mortifying.
Right. I want you to hear what he's doing, and that is he's attacking daycare. Absolutely. Daycare has got to be attacked. I think it's a hot issue to parents, working families. I understand it. If you are a single parent, divorced, you got to go to work. I understand it. So him and the president agree on that. But what he's doing is giving it away for free. So you're going to have anything you get for free, I found out in life, will gradually descend into chaos. And that's what he's doing. Here's what he was talking about. Cut 41.
Let us never forget that victories like these are political choices. Governor Hochul and I have made the choice to deliver for working families. We have made the choice to take these steps towards universal child care. We have made this choice to fix 3K, to deliver universal 2Care, to ensure that, as the governor said, the days of empty promises are over.
So and we get it. So we have free daycare starting, and the governor's afraid to go against him.
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? It sounds so nice, right, in theory, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I have
your
young
rent
children.
Doesn't go up and your daycare is free.
That's right. But where are you getting the money from to pay for all of this, right? Like, where are you getting? She said she's not raising taxes. You raise taxes, you continue down this with this rhetoric. People will leave, right? Like, they're not leaving now, but like, people are on the fence. People are waiting and seeing how far extreme this is going to go. The free daycare. Yeah. In theory, it sounds wonderful, right? But where do we have the money? This city's already lost how many billions of dollars of tax revenue since the pandemic?
Yeah.
I don't get how you pay for this.
I don't think he really worries about that too much. I think that he just says, I'm going to get another $9 billion out of the wealthy. Now, let me ask you, when it comes to some of the banks, these bigger banks, they have not had their sit down for the most part with Zohran Mamdani. What are they waiting to hear? You're dealing with a lot of people that need financing.
Of course. I mean, look, he came aggressive with his campaign, right? And everybody who runs for office, they always promise you the world. I think a lot of people, it's the same concept. It's waiting and seeing how far they try to go with this, right? Like, let him come into office, see what he does. And I mean, look, again, we're 10 days in, 12 days in. You know, they're taking a wait-and-see approach.
How many? You said there's 100,000 empty empty apartments. Are these affordable for the most part? Are they high-end?
No, they're rent-stabilized. These are apartments. These are apartments that you could be bringing onto the market. Like I said before, like, if I came up with a housing plan to create 100,000 affordable housing units, you tell me I was a genius. And they're out there. All you need is reasonable regulation that incentivizes landlords to maintain them in a certain condition and rehab them, put them on the market where there's some sort of an ROI with reasonable regulatory environment so they don't go up to fair market value. That's it.
Right. I mean, and the other thing is, too, is you just want to maybe bring in the landlords and not just talk to the renters. Find out what their biggest contention is. Also, the investors. Find out what made you invest. Mm-hmm. Why did you stop?
How do you keep the momentum and the motivation to continue investing? Without the investment capital coming in, we have nothing.
The GDP is growing at 5.2%. Mm-hmm. A lot of that money traditionally went to places like New York and California. I hope it does stay here, but it's not as if these politicians have earned it. Pierre, thanks so much. Wilmer DeBoss.
information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Tonight, I want to share another way you can help. Witness. Help us establish a record of exactly what's happening in our communities. You have an absolute right to peacefully film ICE agents as they conduct these activities. So carry your phone with you at all times. And if you see these ICE agents in your neighborhood, take out that phone and hit record. Help us create a database of the atrocities against Minnesotans, not just to establish a record for posterity, but to bank evidence for future prosecution.
Prosecution of American law enforcement in an American city. We're not worried about Iran. We're not worried about repression in Venezuela or the horrible things going on in Cuba or the cartels in Mexico. We have to find out about how law enforcement's acting in Minneapolis because they're not cooperating. They don't let their cops cooperate. Josh Krasshauer is with us now, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. So, Josh, your thoughts about how this governor and mayor are coming off.
What is in the water in Minnesota? I mean, the Democratic Party, I mean, which has been trying, to their credit in some spaces of the country, has been trying to moderate, not pander to the radical forces within the party. And in Minnesota, you got the governor, Governor Walz, you've got the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, you've got the attorney general, Keith Ellison, that are seemingly auditioning to be the leading members of the resistance at a time of just such fraught tension between law enforcement and the local communities. They are pouring fuel into the fire, and I was watching the press conference that they had last night after the second ICE-involved shooting, and it just is the thing you don't do, whether it's politically or whether it's just for good. You're just good policy. They don't seem to be wanting to turn down the temperature. And look, the notion to treat the ICE agents like enemies, to tape them. One of the more obscene things I've heard in the last couple of days is that they're comparing the protesters against ICE in Minneapolis to the brave people who have been massacred in Iran, and then making that morally obscene comparison. But that's not just local officials. It's the head of the Democratic National Committee, who's from Minnesota, Ken Martin, tweeted it out and now has publicly said that. And you have some progressive lawmakers kind of reinforcing that message. There really is sort of an echo chamber that I think a lot of these officials are living in. And yes, I mean, there is room to criticize or criticize certain tactics from ICE, but the notion that you're going to be threatening law enforcement and being vigilantes against ICE officials and law enforcement officials in Minnesota seems to be very counterproductive and is only going to add fuel to the fire.
Well, we'll say, do you think this is playing nationwide to help Democrats or Republicans as you see the unrest and these activists? I know how I feel, and I couldn't be angrier about the way they're being treated and the way ICE is being vilified. But how do you think it's playing to, let's say, independents?
Yeah, look, I said this before on the show, Brian, but I think there's sort of a missing middle where I do think that there is the Democratic Party has gotten in a lot of hot water because they have just been dating back to 2019, 2020, the anti-law enforcement party, the defund the police party, the fact that they didn't condemn those factions within the party that seemed to have a real antipathy towards law and order and safety and security. That said, I think, Republicans, especially folks in leadership at the administration level, would be, I think, wise to kind of let the facts, in terms of these investigations settle in before making conclusions. I think it would be good to kind of, I know they're sending more ICE officials, more law enforcement into the state, but I think there is room for some negotiations and some compromise. But they're not. No one in the middle is being represented, I don't think. I think generally on these issues, immigration issues, law enforcement issues, Republicans carry the upper hand politically. But we're in such a strange moment, and in such a moment where no one's trying to kind of reach for the middle and just call for peace and calm and pragmatism. It's hard to say how this lands politically in the long term.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think that I like to know that ICE is going for the coerce first. I've had a couple of callers say they go into Home Depot and just grabbing people who look Spanish. But I haven't heard nobody on the ICE side has said to me, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. So I am not there. But I've heard some anecdotal stuff that's happening. Well, that's too much. I don't care about the numbers. I want the worst out first. And then we start paring through and getting the next layer out. But if I'm the worst and you're hanging out with me, Josh, and you're here illegally too, you're gone. So
and Brian, Yeah, and Brian, that's the message from the White House, that they're, and it's clear that that's where the political sweet spot is, that you're focused on the criminals, the people who are here illegally and also have committed crimes. There are plenty of those people to target and to focus on. I don't think you need to set an arbitrary quota just to deport illegal immigrants necessarily, that some of them who haven't committed any kind of criminal crime, any kind of misconduct except for being here illegally, which is a problem in and of itself. But I think the priority should be getting the criminals out. And the White House knows that, because whenever you hear them talking, they're always saying that they're focused on the worst of the worst and some of the really bad actors, criminals. But in reality, like you said, Brian, that some of the people being deported, some of the aggressive measures are being used against people who are here illegally, and they should be deported at some point. But these aggressive measures may not be the right match for some of those types of people.
Hey, Josh, I really believe the economy is about to really take off. I'm looking at the stock market today. I'm looking at inflation stays at 2.7%. Core inflation went down slightly, but then you have employment. If it just holds, I think on all these other levers, I think we're about to really soar. That might eliminate things. Then you have immigration, which we're just discussing. But the real sense and thought is, what's going to happen in individual races? You took up on the Senate, and you think Democrats have a chance to pick up. I see Republicans have a chance to pick up, but look at what, tell everybody what's happening in Alaska.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Republicans would be wise to kind of keep an eye on the map, because for Democrats to have any chance, and the chances of Democrats winning back the Senate are pretty long, but if they're going to have any chance, they basically have to sweep the table in four different states. Two of them are pretty Republican states. So there's Susan Collins in Maine, her seat. There's the Tom Tillis open seat in North Carolina. But then there's the two red states in Ohio and Alaska. And you know, Chuck Schumer recruited Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who pretty liberal senator, but he's actually won, you know, a lot of key races before last election. So he has a track record of winning in a red state. And you also have Alaska's a really quirky state that tends to vote Republican, but often can get surprising results in certain circumstances. And they recruited a Democratic moderate who was a congresswoman for a term, who won statewide just 2 years ago, lost narrowly her reelection. But she is someone who is exactly the type of Democrat that they would be wise to recruit more people like her.
What's her name? Her name is
Mary Popola. Yeah, Mary Popola.
And in the past, you say that Senator Murkowski, a Republican, so-called Republican, has endorsed her in the past, yet Dan Sullivan's an extremely effective senator?
Well, so Dan Sullivan, the reason I think Democrats are going to have a hard time winning that seat is Dan Sullivan doesn't, I mean, he's a solid, rock solid electoral record, and he's a well-respected senator. So I don't think he's going to be in a whole lot of trouble. But you're right, Lisa Murkowski endorsed the Democrat because she's a moderate, she's pro-energy, she's the type of Democrat, if there were more of her, they might have a better chance of winning a lot of these states in the House races. But she could put Alaska in play. It certainly is a race that Republicans are paying attention to. Chuck Schumer himself said yesterday in a whole round of interviews that the way that Democrats win back the Senate is through Alaska, Ohio, North Carolina, and Maine.
So let's look at Michigan. In Michigan, I think Mike Rogers got a great shot. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, and that's a race. Mike Rogers is all but the nominee, and he is a very highly respected on the Republican side.
Almost won last time.
Almost won against Alyssa Slotkin. It was very, very close. And the Democrats have a mess of a primary that they are very worried about, and it's not going to be wrapped up till August. So, and one of the candidates, actually two of the candidates running, are very, very left-wing, one in particular. But so Democrats are panicked that if the more progressive candidate, the more left-wing candidate wins,
so what about
really squander that seat.
And I look at this New Hampshire, Johnson, I know Chris well. I don't know John, but John's a very established politician who lost once and said, okay, I'm going to do something else. Now he's running for that Senate seat. I love Scott Brown, too. The president seemed to have wanted, his president's team seemed to have recruited Sununu. So that is a chance of flipping, too, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, New Hampshire always a competitive state. It leans a little bit Democratic these days. And I think if Sununu had his way, he probably wouldn't want to have to deal with a primary against Scott Brown. That could hurt the Republican Party's chances a little bit. But yeah, that'll be a marquee matchup. Chris Pappas is the Democratic congressman, likely the nominee for that race. So that's going to be a big battleground, and it's another one worth watching very closely.
What about in Iowa? Joni Ernst was one of a few tough races. Now she says, I've had enough. I have no idea what's there, but I get the sense that Iowa could be the set. The Republicans can't take that for granted.
So, yeah, Joni Ernst is retiring, so whenever you have an open seat, it's always a little more unpredictable. There's also the issue of tariffs. The ag industry has taken it a little bit on the chin, partly because of the tariffs and prices have gone up for and the farmers have had a little bit of a rough spell lately. So that Iowa is something worth a state worth watching. I will say though that the Republican nominee, Ashley Hinson, the congresswoman, is a very respected, very, very politically tested candidate. So the reason Chuck Schumer isn't talking about Iowa is because Republicans have an A-list candidate. The Democratic field is not all that impressive.
Very interesting. Yeah, I do know of her, and she is strong. And lastly, I think they say the most vulnerable senator is in Georgia. But who do you think's the most formed, just what Josh Krasauer thinks, might be the most formidable Republican to emerge? Or do you think it's going to be a legitimate fight? Wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, the Coach Dooley dynamic. He's one of the three Republican candidates. He's the one Governor Kemp seems to like the most. That's the electability play, it seems. But look, John Ossoff should be one of the most vulnerable Democratic senators. He's got a pretty liberal voting record. Georgia is a Republican-leaning state. So that should be the top opportunity for Republicans. But, boy, they just didn't get the candidate. They wanted Governor Kemp to run. Kemp would have been the favorite, I imagine, in that race. And he had decided not to do it. You've got Buddy Carter. You got Mike Collins. So you got a couple congressmen in the field as well. But no one... That is a Lucy in the football state for Republicans. They've always had the opportunity to win those Senate seats in Georgia, and for some reason, they just don't have the right candidate to match. So I think Coach Dooley is probably the best fit, but there's no guarantee he wins the primary.
Right. Big name, but I don't know what he's done. But then again, what do you do before you get the job? And lastly, in North Carolina, I know everyone says Roy Cooper, a popular Democratic senator in a red state in North Carolina, but Michael Whatley knows those ropes too and knows how to gain money. He's certainly a favorite of the MAGA crowd. How's that play out?
Well, look, if Georgia is a state that's sort of been problematic for Republicans in the last few elections, North Carolina has been a Lucy in the football state for the Democrats. They always have some candidate, whether it's in a Senate race or whether it's in a lot of these House races, and Republicans almost always win. Now, the one race that the Democrats have been successful in is the governor's race, Roy Cooper, and now Josh Stein as governor. Democrats have held the governorship, so they're hoping that the magic at the governor at the state level, at the gubernatorial level, can translate into the Senate race. You know, Democrats have not won a Senate race in North Carolina since 2008. It's been a long time, and I think that streak is, you know, I think Whatley's a solid candidate that's probably going to get, you know, it'll be a tough race, but it'll be likely the narrow favorite in that race.
Yeah, it's performance too, right? I mean, and then the thing is, you have Roy Cooper who's doing a lot of the left-wing stuff. These are Republican, the Democratic governors that let these illegal immigrants run wild and let crime go crazy. So,
Well, then, Brian, that's a challenge for any governor. A governor can kind of avoid the national issues, and that's why Roy Cooper has been successful. He can kind of just focus on state and local issues and doesn't have to deal with the polarizing national politics. Once he gets asked about these issues like immigration, law enforcement, having to take a position on foreign policy, you know, that's where Democrats tend to get tripped up in red states.
Absolutely. So we'll see what happens. I just think when people say the House is lost, the Senate's won, I laugh because you got to play the game. It's like picking up your Street and Smith guide in 1980s and seeing the prediction of what's going to happen in the playoffs. I go, great. It's a preseason magazine. That's all it is to tell you what the teams have. Please stop telling me what is already going to happen.
That's why they play the games. Politics is unpredictable, and candidates matter, campaigns matter, and that's why I've been covering politics for over two decades. But that's why it's so fun. If it was as boring and predictable as some people make it out to be, you know, that no one would be in this business. But it's a lot of important candidates. I mean, a lot of important campaigns and big races, and there's going to be a lot of volatility in this midterm election.
I'm just talking about the economy real quick for a second. Gas prices down, I guess, 21 cents in a year. And when I look at I took this picture, $1.98 gas. Now, they know who's raising up the average rate. I mean, the tax in these blue states are putting more taxes in. As the price of gas goes down, they're adding taxes to it so people don't feel it. But they should be seeing decreases. That's political too.
I was just in California, Brian, and I was shocked to see $5 a gallon.
That's crazy,
right? And it's $2.59 near me in Virginia. So you know it is. You're right. Most of that is state taxes. And by the way, if Gavin Newsom wants to run on the California record nationally, which obviously does, that's going to be front and center on any future presidential campaign.
Right. You know, it's going to be different too this year. I really think Trump's going to go through with this idea of having a convention. So we're going to have a midterm convention. And, of course, Democrats will say, we're going to do that, too. So we're not going to get any time off this summer.
There's never a dull moment. Look, for a political junkie, like bring it on. I'm excited to see that.
I do, too. I hear it. I hear you. Josh Krasiow, thanks so much, Josh.
Thanks, Brian.
And pick up his story on FoxNews.com. It talks about follow the red brick road, Democrats' path to Senate through the GOP territory. And you just saw, when you break it down, though, it does seem like a real reach to think Democrats are going to do it. Hey, I got some calls. I'll try to get to them when we come back. Don't move.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
From the moment John Harbaugh had been let go in Baltimore, the Giants prioritized him, recruited him, and went after him as hard as you possibly could. There were other teams after him as well. Tennessee, Atlanta. He was supposed to meet with Tennessee today. That meeting's not going to happen. He could have met with Atlanta later this week. That meeting's not going to happen. The meetings that will occur are with the New York Giants, where he will take over and come in with the type of credibility that Dan Reeves once brought this organization when they hired him. That's what they're looking for right now, somebody to restore the order that's been lacking with the cycle of coaches that this team has gone through over the last decade plus.
So that's Adam Schefter on ESPN confirming what everybody hoped. I'm a huge Giant fan. I have it in perspective. I understand, you know, growing up for the first, when I was a fan, up until 1972, the Giants didn't have a winning record in my life. So I was born in 64. So in 72, they were 8-6, and they kept losing. They didn't make the playoffs until 1981. Think about that. Can you imagine following a team your entire life, not even in the playoffs? They finally get in the playoffs, had that great run, win 4 Super Bowls. I watched it, and then I watched the team do nothing since they got rid of Eli Manning, and even got rid of him early. Went through all these coaches. And now they finally got John Harbaugh, who is one of the most successful coaches that I've seen. 18 years of Super Bowl, countless playoff runs. His record overall is stunning, but he can handle every aspect of football. It looks like when he became available, everybody wanted him. The Giants didn't let him leave the facility. They flew him home, and then before he was actually disembarking, they made an offer. Now five years, $20 million a year. So you got a guy for 5 years. So even if he comes out and he's average this year, you know, wins five, it doesn't matter. You're sticking around. That means you can build in a system. That's huge news. I've never really, when a coach usually can maximize their ability, players, they usually go around and try to up their price. That's not what John Harbaugh does, not what the family does. And had a chance to meet him really since New York City when New York had the Super Bowl. And we've stayed in touch since. You're not going to believe how likable. He'll be more of a national figure in New York than even in Baltimore. But hopefully he gets to bring his entire team with him. By the way, don't forget, Sunday at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, the Brian Kilmeade Show will have One Nation, 10 p.m. And don't forget to go to BrianKilmeade.com and join me in Fort Myers, Florida, February 14th. And then over in Reno, Nevada, May 30th.